Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory today and for future generations. Join Kel Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
GoDamnMedia.com.
Changes. We are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger. I am your host, Kel Fritzy, and tonight I am flying solo. And I'm trying to coax my cat out of the pantry. Yes, the cat and dog saga, it continues. Freya is really taking it hard. But we've got a new addition to the household, and that is, of course, our dog, Dobby Amba. So he's not too darned happy about it. So I'm trying to get her to come out and at least eat some food. Oh, brother. Something else. I have gnats flying in my face, and they're really driving me crazy. And I can't find my article. I think I've got it. Don't worry, folks. We'll be all right. We'll be all right. I found it. But hey, like I say, I'm glad you guys are all filing in. It's great to see everybody. I really want to thank you all for joining us. And hey there, Agador, Bigfoot, Kath, Holger, Liberty Gent, Paul Alexander, Roger Oberlin, and of course my Annie of Southern Senses, Conservative Sense. So welcome everybody. Glad you can be here. I got this really interesting topic that I want to share with you tonight. And, well, we're always told that we're the bigots, right? When it comes to Islam, we're Islamophobes, we're bigots. We don't know what we're talking about. We're persecuting the Mohammedans and so on and so forth. And I'm quite frankly sick of it. Very sick of it, in fact. There is absolutely no reason in the world why we should have to defend our stance for an entity that makes no sense and has no right existing in the West. If you scroll up and look at some of the slides, I've got a really good one in there, and that is being a patriot is not being a bigot. Yeah, I'm kind of ad-libbing that one right now. But if you scroll up and take a look, you'll see it for yourself. But I got this wonderful, wonderful article from Restore Australia. And if that sounds familiar to you, the reason it is because Mike Holt is the proprietor of Restore Australia, and he has his own radio show, heard right here on RFB via Blog Talk Radio, Wednesday afternoons at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. That's right, and I produce for him. He has a fantastic website. You really have to check out everything that this man is doing to apprise you of the threat called Islam. This article in particular, though, is brilliant. And if you also look in my show notes, I've got a quote there from Mike Holt, and it goes like this. Over the last few years, people like me, people who have done our research and seen what was happening overseas, have been accused by the mainstream media and lefties of being bigots and racists. They have no facts to back up these insults. We just didn't meet their left-wing Islam-appeasing political agenda. And that, of course, is a quote from Mike Holt of Restore Australia, a man with whom I'm very, very proud to work alongside in the counter-jihad movement. Boy, I am telling you, though. Yeah, who are the racists and bigots now? Well, take a look around you. You know, because whenever we point out racism, murders, rapes, and other violence that is perpetrated by the followers of Islam, the media reviles us. They revile us. We point out the obvious. We point out the facts, but we are still labeled as racist and bigots and ignorant. You don't understand Islam. It's a peaceful religion. You haven't read the Quran. Well, you know what? Try to figure out reading that crazy book, all right? That thing's been so abrogated so many times that I don't even think that the imams can make sense of it anymore. You can't read the Quran front to back, back to front. No, you have to go from the longest verse to the shortest verse to the longest verse to the shortest verse, vice versa, upside ways to Sunday. It's a crazy book, okay? This Quran is it's just a nutty book. Trying to figure it out is impossible some days. Nobody can figure it out, not even the Muslims. Come on, let's admit that. And no, you do not have to speak Arabic to understand it once you understand how to read the darned thing. This is pretty much why I rely on my reliance of the traveler, believe me. It makes my life that much easier. But it's true. We're the ones who are reviled because we speak out about the truth of what Islam is. We see what is going on globally right now. And especially with the Islamic State, formerly known as ISIS, now they are IS. We see the atrocities they're capable of. We see the subjugation of women, i.e. Sharia law. We see how animals are treated, in most cases better than women. We see how children are treated. We see how women pop out kids like pest dispensers, and they grow up to be shaheeds. We're seeing our youth in the West going over to Syria, for example, to fight in the jihad. Jihad. We're seeing the encroachment of the Islamic populace in the West. We are seeing the no-go zones. We are seeing Sharia courts popping up. We are seeing exactly what they're capable of, their honor killings, their segregation in the classrooms, in the mosques, which are actually jihad recruiting centers. I'm sorry, but Islam is not a religion of peace. It is a political movement, and it is full of violence. And when we talk out about it, well, guess what? We're the racist and we're the bigots. But you know what? Who are the racists and bigots now? Of course, it's Islam. They've been doing this to us when we point out the obvious. They've been doing this because they are unaware of the 1,400 years of war Islam has waged against the West. This is what the left is doing to us. They do this, they vilify us because they are totally unaware of the 1,400 years of war Islam has waged against the West. It's been going on since its inception. We know that. I mean, for goodness sake, why did we go in and fight in the Crusades, right? We were in a defensive front. But, people will lie to you about the Crusades as well. Oh, and look at that. How many people thought that the West was responsible for the Crusades? Ha! But anyone, come on, if you study your history, you know this is entirely wrong. For more than 300 years after Muhammad died, Islam attacked and conquered country after country. They imposed their medieval ideology on their victims or killing them if they refused to convert. Oh, we see what's going on in us in Iraq right now. It took that long for the European kings to put aside their differences and unite to send troops to put a stop to the war Islam was waging on them, okay? Now, remember, Europe was quite a feudal system, and European kings had their differences. But one thing that was a common denominator is that they recognized a threat, and that was called Islam. And they banded together, and thus we had the Crusades, and we were successful. We had three major Crusades. Ladies and gentlemen, I think that we are on a fourth. And look who came out of the pantry. Hey, Freya. Eat your food. Eat your supper. Now, the Crusades managed to force the Muslims back to the Middle East, where they fought. The battles were fierce. Let's put it that way. Bloody, fierce, lots of casualties. But the Crusades managed to subdue them enough to stop the continuous onslaught against Christianity. Now, of course, it wasn't that simple. We know that. The Moors, North African Muslims, invaded and occupied Spain for centuries, and we know that as Cordoba. The Spaniards fought a long, bitter, and sometimes almost hopeless war before they were able to overcome and defeat the Moors. And in the 18th century, even the USA fought the Barbary pirates who were preying on any ships foolhardy enough to sail through the Straits of Gibraltar. Hundreds of thousands of Europeans, including Americans, were captured and enslaved before the U.S. Navy defeated the pirates. This is probably one of my favorite stories about the U.S. Navy. I really love Thomas Jefferson. He established the United States Marine, the Leathernecks, and that was in direct response to the Barbary pirates taking over his shipping lanes through the Straits of Gibraltar. I love that story. Later on, Google that. It's a fascinating story. Now, even that didn't stop, though, the attempts by Islam to subjugate the world to their ideology. Africa and India have been the main targets of Islamists over the last few hundred years. Countless millions have been killed or enslaved. And you know, the slave trade, it continues today. Yes, it does. We know that. We're seeing what's going on with Islamic State, the kidnapping of the women and the slaughter of the children. The women are being sold as brides, forced brides, of course, or they're being passed around by IS members. We see what's happening with the Boko Haram and the kidnapping of Christian schoolgirls. So, yeah, slavery, it's alive and well within the realm of Islam. Saudi Arabia still trades in slavery. Today we might call it indentured servitude, but it's actually slavery. Now, despite this, most Westerners become complacent, and they have ignored events in Africa and the Middle East. In the 20th century, the left gained such political power that any talk about Muslim violence was frowned upon. Yeah, could you believe that? Any talk about Muslim violence was frowned upon. Talk about your useful, dinny idiots. You know, we weren't supposed to point out the real cause of many social problems our countries were experiencing as a result of opening our borders to people from an entirely different social, political, and religious background. No, we weren't allowed to do that. No, that's politically incorrect. You know, let's leave that up to, I don't know, Bill Maher. He's politically incorrect. When, you know, like whenever Islamic violence was discussed, we were told that it was just a few radicals in underprivileged countries causing problems, not the moderate Muslims living amongst us. It was considered bad manners, and it was not politically correct to talk about the nice Muslims like that. Okay. Folks, as you know, I do a lot of shows on Blog Talk Radio. I'm proud of each and every one in which I'm involved. My newest one is Islam Exposed, and that is with Dave Milner, a.k.a. the Unpleasant Blind Guy, Agador in the chat room, and, of course, with Tim Burton of Cat Strangler 101. Thursdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And yesterday, this is exactly what we talked about. That was our topic from yesterday. So if you hadn't had a chance to listen to it, please go into the archive and listen, because that was a very, very important first hour that we dissected. That is exactly it. We discussed the nice Muslims compared to the radicals. Well, hey, you know what? We all know I have smart listeners. So does Dave, so does Tim, so does anybody who discusses the ideology of Islam. All the listeners are smart. And you guys know that Islam is what it is. It's Islam. You know, Tim and I, we talk about, where will you be when jihad comes to town, they're, you know, even so-called moderate, nice Muslim, no. They're following their marching orders is what's going to happen. And that smiling, bobbing head over your fence, exchanging vegetables from your respective vegetable patches in the backyard is going to sneak into your home and slice your throat, because that is Islam. That's what Islam does. Adherents of Islam must follow the dictates of the evil green book called the Quran, even though they don't understand it half the time. So anyway, I kind of went off on a segue there, but making a point. There is not anything called a moderate Muslim. They are adherents to an ideology. So we better get that one squared away right quick. And, oh boy, now I'm an Islamophobe. I'm intolerant, because I cannot accept that the religion of peace is that. Too bad. Okay, you know what? I am a bit of an Islamophobe, because I kind of like my head attached to my shoulders, you know? The only thing about Islam that scares me is their craven ability for creating as much torture and anguish as possible. So if that makes me an Islamophobe, fine. I'm an Islamophobe, because I really, you know, don't want to die brutally, like we're seeing what's going on in Iraq right now. And I'll touch on that in a moment. But over the last few years, there have been activists around the world who have started pointing out the dangers of allowing unfettered Islamic immigration into Western countries. Even though we could see what was going on, it appeared that our governments and the lefties either couldn't see the truth or they didn't want to acknowledge it for fear of being branded. Here we go, folks. Repeat after me. Racist. Racist. That's it. That's the ticket. Yeah. A lot of people say that, Muslims, because of their brown skin, that when we criticize Islam, we're being racist because the brown people follow their religion. Well, did it ever occur to anybody that maybe they just have really, really, really groovy tans? We know that Arabs are Caucasian, but they tan. Maybe the Pakistanis, I don't know. But let's just pretend that everybody is white and they just happen to sunbathe a little more successfully than, say, this pasty white redhead whose people hail from Ireland, okay? Maybe they're just better at the sun tanning beds. I don't know. But I am so sick of that label, being called a racist, because I'm critiquing. I'm doing a hell of a lot more than critiquing. You guys know that. But I am sick and tired of being called a racist because I'm calling out the obvious. They're violent, they're intolerant, and they hate us. And I mean, they really, really, really hate us. Tim and I, when we do our Monday afternoon show, we have that song on hiatus right now because we're playing a special song in support of Israel. But we play 929, and that's chapter 9, verse 29 out of the Quran. That song explains everything. I might even play that a little later. I do have something here, though. I'm going to play this for Holger a little later on. but getting back to, yes, the issue of racism, that is such a cop-out. And we have to tell our respective governments that we're not putting up with it anymore. If I say that Islam is a big old piece of you-know-what, I mean it. But that does not make me a racist. That does not make me intolerant. That makes me calling out the truth. I was alluding to Boko Haram. They kidnapped over 200 young girls earlier this year. Islam is getting more and more and more violent. But people are starting to fight back. I think that Boko Haram really rose the ire in the West to the point where even our politicians cannot deny that we have problems going on here. When you kidnap over 200 young Christian schoolgirls and you either rape them and sell them as sex slaves, or you outright kill them if they don't convert to Islam, finally the world sat up and started to take notice. And please ignore the moocher in the People's House. Yeah, you know who I mean, Michelle. Michelle Obama. I find it hard to say those names because I despise these people. Never mind her little photo op, you know, holding up her, you know, bring our girls home with the hashtag. You know, her eyes are all puppy sad, and bring our girls home. Ignore the bullshitters like her. We don't have time for that. We, the people in the West, we stood up. We took notice. And our politicians can no longer ignore what we have to say. You know? Well, when those girls were kidnapped, that was followed by the realization that thousands of Western Muslim youths, including Aussies, and here we go again, were flooding across to Syria to fight alongside our enemies and, yes, the terrorists. Further adding to the anger was the realization that Western governments were actually arming these terrorists against a legally elected Syrian government. I really do find that shocking. Were we arming them? Why do we do this? Do we do it out of a sense of guilt? Is this the white guilt complex? I don't know. But there are certain government bodies that were supporting the Syrian terrorists. Bashar was legally elected, and the United States administration, and I don't mean the United States people, I mean the Obama administration, would not recognize a legally elected Syrian government. Why would that be, I wonder? I don't know. If somebody would like to call in and explain that one to me, I'd be more than happy to discuss. But then the ISIS came around. They're formerly known as Islamic State of Iraq and Sham, which is Syria. They have now shortened it to IS, which is merely the Islamic State. Well, I don't mean merely. I just mean they've shortened it. They shortened the acronym. So they are merely known as IS now. When they invaded northern Iraq, they started wholesale killings. They killed anyone and everyone who did not subscribe to their particular brand of Islamic madness. We have seen the ultimatum issued to Christians, a Mosul, to either convert, flee, or be killed. We're all aware of the Hamas-Palestinian attacks on Israel, which has roused the left into frothing orgies of hatred of the Jews and our own Western governments who are branded as warmongers and invaders. Oh, please. They conveniently overlook the fact that there is absolutely no historical justification for the existence of a Palestinian state. And that is true. There is no historical justification for a Palestinian state. None. But we see the anti-Semitism on our streets via the Mohammedans and their rallies and their speeches and their open hatred towards the Jewish people. However, where they're racist and where they're bigots. See, being a Jew means being part of our race. Jewish people, that's a race. Islam is not a race. Anybody can join Islam. I can join Islam. All I have to do is, hop on one foot, turn around three times, put my finger on my nose and go, Allahu Akbar, three times fast, and hey, boom, I'm a Muslim. Okay, you know what? I'm kidding, but kind of. Boy, if I ever wanted to convert to Judaism, that would be months and months and months of courses. Oh, my goodness. But if you want to become a Muslim, you just have to offer up a simple quote, and an imam will oversee your recitation, and boom, you're in the club. I mean, they don't even care who gets in, you know? At least Christianity and Judaism, we're pretty, particular that you have a modicum of understanding of what the religion is, the respective religions are, I should say. But, yes, getting back, IS, the wholesale killing of anyone and everyone who did not subscribe to be their particular brand of Islamic madness. The Hamas-Palestinian attacks on Israel. Anti-Semitism reared its ugly head around the world. However, it wasn't until a rabbi was attacked in Perth and a busload of Jewish children were abused and threatened in Sydney by a group of thugs. Ethnicity unknown. Yeah, thanks, MSM. The Australians started to realize that Islam is here and just as dangerous as it is in the Middle East. Now, remember, this is Mike Holt's article from Restore Australia, and he is speaking from the viewpoint of an Aussie. We have seen the anti-Semitism rise its ugly head here in North America and in the UK as well. We saw what happened in Florida last week when an Hasidic Jew was shot. It was explained that he was being robbed. That's right. The motive was robbery. Oh, come on, guys. If you buy that, please. I'll sell you the swamp land over there in Florida, too. Come on. We know what's going on here. We're seeing riots break out in the streets. We are seeing businesses being destroyed because they're Jewish-owned. We've seen the riots in France. Things are escalating, but we're the racist and we're the bigots. Right. What they are doing, what IS is doing with the Christians of Mosul? Three choices. Convert to Islam, flee, or be killed. Like, what kind of so-called religion engages in this? I thought there was no compulsion in Islam. Oh, yeah, that was abrogated too. Oopsie, my bad. Oh, so sad. Oh, brother. You know, there was a Hamas-Palestinian attack on Israel. We had the anti-Semitism then raise its ugly head. And yes, I do say attacks on Israel because Israel was not the aggressor. Israel is the defender. But when you speak out against the Gazan Arabs, or you speak out against Islamic State, you speak out against the Mohammedans in general, you're the racist and you're the bigot. You know, the media is now starting to report. Hey, and Kath from the chat room, are there any Christians left in Mosul? Good question. I can Google that at the top of the hour when I take the break. That's a darned good question. Now, the media, they have started reporting the atrocities committed by Islamists, and, of course, in Africa and Iraq. I mean, those are the huge, huge, huge hot spots. But the media, they're still going to try to spin that there is a difference between the radicals overseas and the nice Muslims living amongst us. Wrong. 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 I wonder if these, bubble-headed beach blondes, have ever wandered the streets of Dearbornistan or somewhere. There are hot pockets in Maine now, I understand, listening to No Way 90. Of course, you listen to people like Jeff Mitchell of EDL Radio and Tim Burton, who is also in the UK. You listen to them speak. And they talk about the Islamic no-go zones. Okay, and were they racist and were they bigots? People in England, in particular, England is a few years ahead of North America, so using them as a template for now. It's unrecognizable. Some pockets is so foreign now. Everybody knows Tommy Robinson. He is one of the founders of the English Defense League. He did a short documentary about going into his hometown of Tower Hamlets. When I watched that a few years back, I thought, that didn't even look like England to me, you know? I have a very romantic notion of England. My mother's people are from there. And when I think of England, I think of the Moors, and I don't mean the Islamic Moors. I mean the Moors, like the countryside and the quaint villages and Genesis, you know, and can you tell me where my country lies? That the uniform to the true love bride. It's just it's just so hauntingly romantic. And so when I watched this, short documentary by Tommy Robinson a few years ago, I was almost like beside myself because I thought, this is not the England my grandmother talked about. This is not, Kidderminster or anything like that. It's become nothing but a pocket of radicals, racists, and bigots. Try walking through Tower Hamlets with that sack of wine. You do a little shopping after work. You're going to have a nice supper, and you pick up a bottle of wine to take home to put on the table, and you walk through. They literally confiscate it from you. That's bigotry. Because when was alcohol outlawed in the UK? Same thing in Dearborn, Michigan. Maybe not nearly as bad, say, as Tower Hamlets. Things are getting very, very dire in Birmingham as well. You heard Tim talk about the Trojan horse issues. But where the racists and where the bigots? This I do not understand. I don't understand the media and their spin that they put on it. Now, something in this article from Michael, not Michael, sorry, Michael Green will be joining me at the top of the second hour, but Mike Holt, a Restore Australia, his article, what he says here. The media still doesn't understand that all Muslims believe in the same Quran, the same Prophet Muhammad, and the same God Allah. Nor do they get that the violent, murderous Muslims are the true followers of Islam. They consider the moderates bad Muslims, and that's true. The true followers of Islam, if you're a moderate Muslim, if such a thing exists, well, they're not practicing Islam to the letter, so they're bad Muslims. Now, eventually, the moderates will be forced to choose, and we all know that they will side with their Islamic brothers and sisters or face death if they don't. And that is exactly what I was talking about near the beginning of the program. It is. Where are you going to stand? For example, you know, to overuse the term, when jihad comes to town. All right. Now what's going to happen when we get an Islamic percentile that is so high that they can influence our voting base and they insist on Sharia? And then IS, which has its designs for a global caliphate, and IS puts out the word, O ye brothers and sisters, or whatever, you know, how they talk. You are either with us or against us. And if you're against us, you will face death by the sword. But if you are with us, you will do our bidding, and that includes killing your Christian or Jewish neighbor. See, there's no either or with Islam. All they know is raping, killing, pillaging, and conquering. But we still continue to allow Muslims to live among us. We've already seen how many imams, which are, you know, quote-unquote holy men and scholars. I always find that funny, you know, when they refer to a Mohammedan as a scholar. That means that he made it past the Archie comic books mentality. I'm sorry. Oh, okay. Now, see, hey, now I'm being a bigot. But they're forcing the hand of the so-called moderates in Syria to slay their Christian neighbors, yes? Because if the moderates hadn't obeyed the imams, they would have been slain themselves. That's right, in Syria. I'd like to answer Cass' question about are there any Christians left in Mosul. I would have to say pretty much at this point no, but I'm guesstimating, so I would like to look into that one further. Maybe I will have something on Monday, something a little more comprehensive. We know Islam itself is the problem. Come on, you know? Because this is the point where we activists have been making for the last few years. We know there is a problem. We know exactly what's going on. It's Islam. Islam is the problem. We're not the problem. We're pointing out the obvious. The emperor has no clothes. The emperor being Islam. We're not just one little boy in the streets declaring that. It's all of us as a collective. We know Islam is the problem. You know, this is the point that I have been making as well for the last few years. Now, believe me, I am by far not a scholar I am not a Tim Burton. I am not a Mike Holt, who had their own radio shows here. I am not a Usama Dakdok or Dr. Mark Christian. But I have a modicum of an understanding to convey to you in my rudimentary knowledge what Islam is. And Islam itself is the problem. The moderate Muslims are irrelevant, okay? Because they have been silent in the face of the violence overseas and here in Australia and in North America and the UK. In Sydney, Australia, western suburbs being set alight by night, shootings and thuggish attacks on rival drug-dealing gangs. Other evidence arose as well. Islam rape gangs, female genital mutilation, attempts to impose Sharia law, Muslims pouring out of Auburn and Lakaba, pouring out of the mosque on Friday afternoons, and they block streets as they pray facing towards Mecca, and much more. The evidence has always been there. Islam is determined to destroy our civilization using every means at its disposal and impose a brutish 7th century ideology instead. Just to keep on this for a few minutes, the Islamic rape gangs, female genital mutilation, attempts to impose Sharia law. They pour out of the mosques. They flood the streets with their asses lifted in the air, blocking traffic. And nobody says a word because we do not want to offend the minority rights of an identifiable group. One thing, too, is the Adham, the call to prayer in Europe and in Canada, and in the United States. They want to have the minarets fitted with speakers so that they can engage in the call to prayer in the West. Now, why do you think they would need to do that? If you are a true Mohammedan, you don't need a loudspeaker to tell you it's time to pray. You know when it's time to pray. 5 times a day. 7 days a week. This is just another example of their conquest. But were they racist and were they bigots? No, they're the bigots. They're racist too, of course. But they're indeed the bigots because they know that they can impose these proposals on us, and our lamestream media and our weak governments will accommodate. We've been accommodating Islam pretty much since 9/11 in earnest. After 2001, we went out of our way to embrace our Muslim brothers and sisters, which made me sick to my stomach. You know, we had celebrities, you know, on stages saying, "That's not Islam." Well, yeah, it is Islam. I have noticed a very, very, very stark reality. Islam is once again becoming much more militant. We see this with the Islamic State, Hamas, Al-Qaeda, and their designs on the global caliphate, and how they treat the kafir or the infidel. segregation. Pay the jizya tax. Convert or die. But we're the racist and we're the bigots. Now, his ut ta'er is a declared terrorist organization overseas. They've already published an Islamic constitution for Australia. Unbelievable. See? They're already rewriting our constitutions for us. Ain't that swell? And at the same time, we find out that the Muslim Brotherhood, headquartered in Sydney, is behind many of the radical mosques scattered around Australia. They are funding the building of more mosques. Now, considering that less than 500,000 Muslims supposedly live in Australia at present, they already have over 300 mosques. And you have to ask yourself, people, why do they need more? It's called conquest. It's called conquest. They build it because they can. Because we allow it. Because of our appeasement. We have the Muslim Brotherhood, and we know the front groups. I like that, Holch. Would it be politically incorrect if your state's constitution was amended to state that all imams living in the state must be neutered? I love it. Oh, yeah. Believe me, I'm to the point where eugenics is almost looking good when it comes to this group. Good grief. But the Muslim Brotherhood, the front groups, Council of American Islamic Relations, Muslim Student Association, so on and so forth. The Muslim Brotherhood has set up Muslim associations in each state to coordinate attempts to force Sharia law. These associations are also behind the many companies imposing and collecting the hated halal certification tax on most of our food. Oh boy, that is one heck of a topic. Now, believe me, go to islamforinfidels.com. That's my cult site. Restore Australia. Go to that site as well. Mike Holt will fill you in big time about the halal certification and how we are making them wealthy. Do you know halal certification in Australia? It generated more than $2.8 trillion a year for Islam, and the scam is growing faster each year as they force more companies to pay the tax or the jizya on their very own food, our very own food. It's no wonder the world is under attack by Islamists. They are well-funded. Their Quran is a terror manual for them to work from, and they are fanatical in their belief that they have the right to convert everyone in the world to Islam or kill us. Now, despite all this evidence, the media has consistently labeled us activists, the racists, and the bigots, even when we pointed out that it didn't make sense to call us racist because Islam is a religion, quote-unquote, and Muslims come from many nationalities and ethnicities. They still refuse to accept this. But are we surprised by this? No. The media has always been much more interested in sensational headlines than telling the truth. So why let the truth get in the way of a good story that will sell more papers, right? Right on, Mike Holt. However, with all the evidence piling up, evidence too awful to ignore, the media is finally starting to report the truth. It is encouraging to see even the ABC presenting the news about the Islamic atrocities here and overseas. At last, stories are appearing in the newspapers and on TV, exposing the truth about Islam. The media still hasn't learned enough about Islam to fully understand its aims, but at least they are starting to report what is going on. Mike Holt started this article. Who are the racists and bigots now? It should be clear by now that the real racists and religious bigots are the Muslims. They are the ones killing anyone who refuses to convert to Islam. When they settle in Western countries, they isolate themselves from their hosts and refuse to integrate. They demand concessions from the host countries to allow them to live separately under their own Sharia laws and customs. We cannot allow this to happen any longer. We have to stop it from continuing. It's time for our governments to stand up for we the people and pass laws to limit and even stop the spread of Islam. It's time to protect our citizens. A logical first step would be to declare the Quran a terrorist manual. That would lead to banning Islam completely from our nation. If that sounds too radical, ask yourself, would you prefer the creeping Islamization that other nations are already suffering? Is this a future you want to lay for your children? Keep that in mind. I'm going to take a break now, and Michael Green will be joining me on the other side of the hour. But I'm in one of those moods, and so I'm going to play something interesting. Actually, this is one of my favorite bands. I'll see everybody back here in about 5 minutes. This is New World Order by Ministry.
Come on!
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Red Fox Blogger. I'm your host, Cal Fritzy. And Agador, Bigfoot, Kath, Eric, Holger, Liberty Regent, Paul Alexander, Roger Oberlin, Southern Sense, Sue, and others who are joining me tonight. Thank you very much, and I want to thank all of you that listen in archive as well. and welcome to you as well, guest. And I'm sorry, I'm giggling because playing that song, I just imagine that if I were a Mohammedan, that song going through my head 24/7, I might begin to understand exactly what makes these people tick. I texted in the chat room. I said, I wonder what Jeff would do if I posted this in his studio. I'm getting encouragement. Oh, I'm sorry. I would label it the English Patriot song. Okay, I something shiny caught Kel's eye again. But can you imagine Jeff clicking on that? Oh, Kel, what's this? Oh, Jeff, it's a very, very calming song. It's about English patriotism. how do you spell, I'm changing the damn passwords, Kel? Oh, so anyway, but yeah, the first hour, and what I forgot to do, you know, what I'm going to do actually is that I'm going to put the link to this article right in the show notes before I close out, but I'll put it in the chat room right now for you. I'll put it in the show notes for the archive listeners for later. But what I want to do right now is that I want to bring on, well, I've got two people here that want to join me. I've got one person that I really must bring on, and I know who this is. 7238, how are you tonight?
Hey, it's the professor.
Professor, how are you?
Well, I'm in Missouri right now trying to avoid the riots. But, I was fairly successful until that last song came on, and then I thought Mad Max was on my tail.
I'm surprised I didn't make you run off the road.
I thought Holger maybe took over your show or something. That's why I wanted to lullaby.
That's Holger's winding down music, don't you know, Prof?
For sure, hey. Eh?
He puts that on when he comes home from work.
Yeah, I could see him sitting there.
Oh, so what have you been up to?
Well, I've been with my daughter all week, so I'm doing a 19-hour trip home, debating if I'm going to do my show live while I'm driving or just play the archive that I have picked. I have one for the Second Amendment I was going to play, and, driving and doing it at night and talking. Yeah. But I clued in years, and then I realized that after this, I don't know where to go because Ken's not on tonight. Either.
Oh, well, actually, there's quite a few shows on tonight. Where are we going next? Hey, guys, where are we going next? Who are we going to monopolize after we do our show here? I think maybe we should go to RZ's place.
Oh, well, there is reactionaries, yeah. Now, on my Sunday show, I was up in Hillsdale, I'm going to tell you all about the Hillsdale Political Convention for the Republican Party, for their county party. I attended that, and then I'm going to do something up. On the right, we make a lot of accusations about the Muslims, you know, that they're violent, that they're this, that they're that. And I'm going to explain on Sunday's show quite a few of the reasons why we make those accusations. because I have,
right,
I have found out,
on,
talking to a lot of people, they don't know why. They know that it's true. They just don't know why. So we're going to explain why, much like the American Indians from the Cowboys, the only good Muslim's a dead one, you know, things like that. So I'm much more than a phobic when it comes to Muslims.
What time is your show on? You have shows Mondays, Fridays, and Sundays, right?
See, Tuesday, Friday, Sundays.
Tuesdays,
and
Fridays, and Sundays?
Yeah.
I'll
Tuesday,
get these
Fridays,
dates right, you know.
It's 10 p.m. Eastern tonight and Tuesday, and then on Sunday it's 7 p.m. Eastern.
Oh, you're like me. You have different times. I drive everybody crazy with my times.
And now that
it's
been a couple of months, I'm thinking about switching it all up again just to keep everybody guessing.
I'm looking forward to your Sunday show. That's going to be a fascinating one. Okay, guys. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very biased. I do have my favorite, Kel's faves, her picks. And Underground Professor, you're definitely in the, you know, in the Cal pick. I kind of feel like that episode from Seinfeld where Elaine is trying to figure out which movie to pick out, and there's some mysterious person that says, "This is my face pick."
Hi, Lassie. Denny, you asked me so. Hey, Celtic. At least you didn't say Celtic. You know, that's a basketball player, not someone from Scotland or Ireland. So I like that. This may not be a feather in my cap, but I may be the only talk show host on Blog Talk that talks about the Muslims and has actually killed a few. So that may be a distinction to separate me from the rest of the hosts. I've been there. You know, I've been in the country, and I know what it's like because I was there for Desert Storm, and I understand a lot more about it than most Americans ever will because I've been in theater, you know, in-house and downrange. So it is truly frightening. I'm going to tell some stories that I don't know is that I've ever told on my show. I may have, but I just don't remember. But I've actually witnessed hands being chopped off, beheadings, a rape of an American female soldierette who was raped because she was getting gas for her Humvee. You know, things
absolutely
like that. So we're going to talk about that. And
are you going to have any guests on with you, or are you going to have a panel, or are you going to speak solo, straight from your heart? Well, you always speak straight from your heart.
Well, that's true. I find it's hard for me to get panels and stuff because all I want to do is interrupt them, and so everybody knows how brilliant I am, and that slows me down.
So you would be one of the cats I heard.
I do enjoy that, but it's so hard on me to be quiet, you know, when everybody else is there. Like that show I did on Ann's Southern Scent show, there were like 14 of us, which meant each one of us got three words, and Ann did the rest of the show. And but it was a great show, but it was like I deserved like one of those rodeo belt buckles for, you know, only talking 8 seconds and then getting thrown off.
Oh, well, proper. Are you on the road still driving right now?
Yes, I just about 10 minutes ago passed Busch Stadium. And if it wasn't raining, I thought about pulling in and watching a Cards game. But it's raining right now in St. Louis, Missouri. So I'm heading towards Fort Worth. Should be in there about 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, God. Godspeed to you, Prof. Holy smokes.
So what I'm going to do, just so everybody knows, I've got a Second Amendment show lined up to go automatically, but I may override it if at 9 o'clock I'm in a place where it looks safe for the next 2 hours, you know, if I'm not in the middle of a city proper or something. I may flip over and just do it live.
Oh, very cool. I'm going to look for you because Reactionary Speaks, his show ends at 10, and then yours comes on right after his.
Yeah, same time, right. So, That's probably what I'll do, because I usually on Fridays, I remember now, I usually pop into RZ's so I can get all worked up and then start my show.
Oh, I'm going to let you go and do that. You know what? I'm going to your place anyway after RZ's, and going to take a listen anyway. I usually do. I usually listen in archive, but I'd like to be in your chat room live every once in a while because you're just so engaging. You have the best chat rooms. You have one of the best chat rooms going on. Everybody is just so engaging over there.
They're amazing. And sadly, they intimidate me, so I have to bring my A game every show.
You too, eh?
Yes. Because, they'll catch me in something, so I can't do anything halfway. I have to know what I'm doing, or they'll leave me alive.
Exactly.
Well, you've got another guest that's supposed to come on. They get out of your hair, and I'll listen.
It's so good to hear your voice on my humble show. I'm in awe of yours, and so this is quite an honor for me. And yes, I'm being a bit of a sycophant, but it's only because I'm a huge fan of yours.
Well, thanks. You're the one.
That's me with my Bic lighter.
That's it. Over there, I almost feel like I could play that song Lighters now. Keep up the good work, Carol. And I'll close by saying this. What's going on in France, England, and Australia should be a warning shot to the people of America, but they won't see it. When the Republican Party is the only chance of protecting us, and they're more afraid of Nancy Pelosi than they are Osama bin Laden, that should tell you something.
From your lips to God's ears.
Yeah, it's going to be up for all of us, but it's going to be up to us.
It is.
Save us. Yeah. All right. Well, good luck.
So maybe we'll see you tonight at 10. Thanks, Prof.
Yes. All right. And as I like to say in Arabic,
la 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 la.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Prof. I'll talk to you later. And with that, I am bringing on the man of the 45 minutes. Hi, Michael. Michael Green, thank you so very much for being here tonight. How are you tonight, kind sir?
I'm fine, thanks.
So what's been going on with you? You have some news out of Israel again.
Well, there are developments in different fronts. And what I'll do tonight is I'll first address the new developments in Israel. There are new developments in Iraq and in Syria and some developments in Afghanistan. Okay, so first we'll give an update concerning negotiations with the Israeli government and elements of Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and Fatah. If anyone's been following this story, Israel began an operation over a month ago called Protective Edge to take down Hamas rocket fire and also to locate and destroy infiltration tunnels that were allowing Hamas to enter Israel and, of course, carry out terrorist attacks on its population in the south, areas like Sirot, Ashkelon, so forth.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed that Israel was going to stay the course and keep their ground forces in. About a week after the operation began is when the ground forces entered Gaza. Prior to that, there was what we call in the military as softening up, and a lot of that was done by airstrikes and artillery strikes on many, many targets in Gaza. IDF forces suffered about 64 killed in action and numerous wounded. The casualties on the other side, of course, were much more extensive, with many civilian casualties from collateral damage, which is unavoidable in war. Let me make a point, though, first of all, is that the nation of Israel has gone to extreme lengths to avoid civilian casualties. And the enemy, so to speak, Islamist terrorists, of course, they deliberately target civilian casualties. To deliberately go out of one's way on the battlefield and to target civilians just because they're Muslim is absolutely wrong. It is wrong in the eyes of God. It is wrong morally. It is wrong ethically. It makes us no better than the savages if we're going to say, hey, let's kill all Muslims. First of all, that'll never happen. Secondly, it's a genocidal statement. You know, people take issue with the genocide of the Armenian Christians, over a million of them slaughtered by the Ottoman Turks in 1915, and, of course, the enormous slaughter of Jews during the Holocaust. So I don't think we, certainly me personally, I will never stoop to that level. I will never say the only good Muslim is a dead Muslim. That's an outrageous and despicable statement. And, you know, I've met some Muslims in my life who are secular. They're born into a family where the mother and father are Muslim. They have not really practiced Islam. They don't know much about it. And so just because they happen to be Muslim, does that mean their life should be terminated? Of course not. You know, it's just, it's a bad precedent to set, to make any kind of reference to, you know, eliminating Muslims per se. It's the ideology that is, you know, what is behind it. And there have been some Muslims. There was a famous story of a young man who was the son of the founder of Hamas. His name escapes me for the moment, but he converted and became a peaceful Christian. So did Waleed Shubat. So did Noni Darwish. You know, I could go all down the list. Now, there aren't enough of them to make a massive difference, but, you know, that's not our decision. That's in God's hands. Let's concentrate on focusing our efforts on those who we know
are. I'm not really in a position to support that in particular, because I am very much a hardliner. I'm very much opposed to Islam altogether. Of course, I don't want to see people killed. But I do want to see Islam eradicated altogether. I don't think that there's a place for Islam in the West.
No, there's not. It's an ideology. Sure. Right. We're talking about an ideology. Now, to eradicate an ideology is
much
different.
And I'd rather stick with that, because I don't defend Islamists that, you know, cut school children in half while they're still alive. I mean, that's Islam to me. That is my understanding. That's my ideology.
Absolutely. Every Muslim,
Muslims
should not
don't
be,
take
yeah.
responsibility. Yeah, if Muslims don't take responsibility for what they consider to be a religion, then I have no pity on any Muslims that are part of a casualty of war in which we are at. So I just wanted to make my decision. It's not the time to debate it,
but, you know, let's look at, you know, I got to make one more point, though. You know, children are born into a family. No one has control over what family you're born into. So the idea that a little baby or a 3 or 4 or 5-year-old child is dead, you know, I would hope no one would get any joy or pleasure or think that's a positive thing. Collateral damage is the result of war, but, you know, dead children who had no choice that their mother and father are Islamic, whether it's in Gaza or any place in the world, you know, we can't hold them accountable. So let me move on to the issues with Israel, as I was identifying. So there's been an agreement reached between the various factions, and of course it doesn't benefit Israel. I'll give you a few points of this agreement. What they're going to do is they're going to open the crossing to allow people to go from the West Bank to Gaza. They're going to allow for funds to come into Gaza, supposedly, you know, to certain leaders of Hamas or salaries or something like that. They're going to allow for certain materials that will be supervised in the delivery of these materials, you know, to rebuild different homes that were destroyed, basically humanitarian aid and whatnot. But anyway, the thing that's most disturbing, and if people understand what's going on, the President of the United States has put enormous pressure on the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, and unfortunately he has caved in to this pressure and has made concessions that I am absolutely against. I would say probably many people in Israel are against, and many people who know what's going on the ground there are against these concessions. You know, Hamas can't be trusted. The Palestinian Authority is now right in the picture where they're going to be monitoring certain things, and supposedly PA forces will be put on the ground in Gaza, and they're going to have some type of monitoring of other aspects of this arrangement. They're going to provide medical aid for people who have been wounded, which is understandable. You know, people suffering, they're wounded. We're not talking about terrorists now. You know, we're talking about people who, you know, you can't just leave them there to suffer and languish and die. So, but the overall scope of this agreement is that it's going to compromise Israel's security long term. And it ties back to an accord made in 2012 when Hamas and Israel had a similar situation, not as intense, but they came to an understanding. The problem, of course, is that the funds that did come into Hamas were used to build these tunnels. And so, therefore, we know Hamas is a dedicated Islamist terrorist organization committed to the destruction of Israel, of course, committed to the annihilation of Jews. It sets a bad precedent because Israel has kind of more dangerous enemies than Hamas. They have Iran, which, of course, is seeking to acquire nuclear weapons. There's speculation they may already have a few. There is ISIS, which we'll get into, and they are a much bigger threat to Israel than Hamas and so forth. So it makes Israel, I believe, look weak. They should have finished the job that they set out. Now, it would have been a long-term conflict because urban warfare is a very messy situation. It's basically a guerrilla war they would have been involved in. And they would have had to sacrifice, tragically, you know, more members of their military, the IDF. But you know what? To have peace in the long term is better to fight the battle now and get it done. The biggest problem with this agreement is that within the confines of it, there is no reference to the demilitarization of Gaza, which initially was a very important point that the Israelis were maintaining throughout these negotiations up until recently.
I like what Agador said in the chat room, and why make it long-term? Just carpet bomb the whole mess a few weeks, and you're done.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, Israel is a government. It has to interact with other nations. That's true. It cannot exist like an island to itself. So we have to be practical. The problem here is that there was a delivery of Hellfire missiles, which are air-to-ground missiles, and they're very effective. We use them on our fixed-wing aircraft, actually not really a fighter jets. We use them on attack helicopter gunships, and we use them on drones. So Obama delayed or actually stopped the shipment of these Hellfire missiles to Israel. The information just came out. A lot of things have transpired between Netanyahu and Obama that we don't know, we're not privy to. And I don't think a lot of it's going to ever really be revealed at this time. We do know that America provides at least $3 billion in aid to Israel. And so I think that was probably a big leverage or kind of sword that Obama was hanging over Netanyahu's head. I am disappointed that he did capitulate and, you know, cave in because what will happen more than likely, within a few years, they will be back again in a similar scenario, maybe worse. Hamas may be able to somehow acquire larger rockets, more deadly, able to actually, you know, do much more damage than the rockets they've been firing. So in the short term, yes, it brings peace. I don't believe Hamas will violate this agreement at this stage. It's not in their interest. They're very shrewd, and for them to start launching rockets again doesn't benefit them. They're not going to do it, I don't think.
I've lost count of the ceasefires. Is this the 9th one or the 10th one?
Well, this is not actually a ceasefire. I mean, it is, but it's transitioning into an agreement on paper that has some of the points.
Okay, like an armistice.
Well, it's saying, okay, here's what we're prepared to do, you know, on the Israeli side, and here's what we're prepared to do on the Hamas, you know, Fatah side, and it doesn't help Israel's security in the long term. You know, that's the real problem, and in the climate and atmosphere that exists, it shows weakness to Israel's enemies. I have no idea what other things the nation of Israel relies on from the government of the U.S. I do not know that information, you know, so I can't say, is it something so critical that Netanyahu, you know, didn't want to lose whatever else. Obama is no friend of Israel. Publicly, he says he supports their right to defend themselves, but privately, we know his thoughts. He would like to see them taken out. You know, there's no doubt about it. You got some other bad actors, some other players in the picture. You have Qatar, which is a fascist Muslim state, and of course, it's been giving enormous funding to Hamas. And then you have Turkey, and Turkey's in the picture.
Oh yeah. And Turkey wanted into the EU. I think the EU dodged a bullet with that one.
Yeah, well, Turkey is a member of NATO, though, and that's very disturbing. You know, we'll get into some of the new details I have of what's been happening in Turkey and Turkey's connection to ISIS and support of Islamist, you know, terrorism and whatnot. But for now, it seems that the fighting between Israel and Gaza has stopped, and moving forward, we'll see, you know, what will bring. But my prediction is Hamas will not start up any further hostilities. It's not in their interest. They want to rebuild, rearm. They want to buy time. What they did here, very important point, is to all these different ceasefires, which they violated, they got the world stage. So they got some more legitimacy, because here they are, and their representatives are in Egypt, and the president of Egypt, who is former general of the Egyptian army, Assisi, so he's mediating this whole thing. And Hamas is looking like, hey, wait a minute, we want these, you know, humanitarian things, we need this, open the crossing, we need fishing rights extended, we need an airport, we need a seaport, you know, basic things that a normal country, so to speak, would have, not a terrorist state. So Israel really miscalculated in allowing themselves to get kind of roped into this back and forth, a couple week-long negotiations, didn't help their standing in the world one bit, didn't improve their security, just brought them some peace temporarily.
Now, this is the thing, is that if there are ongoing negotiations at this point for, you know, to use the phrase armistice again, will Israel be part of the rebuilding of the Gaza Strip?
Well, they're going to
provide...
I think
you're saying there is.
Yeah, from what we understand, they're going to provide certain materials. They're certainly going to allow the flow of those materials to enter Gaza. It's going to be supervised, whatever that means, and that they have some new technology they're developing also to allegedly detect tunnels that might be built. It won't be ready for about another year.
They're going to have to do something. They're going to have to, I really, personally, I don't like this path. I think that the Gazan Arabs should be eradicated from the Gaza Strip altogether and sent back to either Saudi Arabia or back to Jordan. But I guess, you know, I guess that's not my call to make. That's just my opinion. But if there's going to be any rebuilding efforts, and yes, it's going to be supervised this time. It wasn't the last time. We saw what happened with our humanitarian aid, and they ended up building, well, the tunnels. Bigfoot said in the chat room, well, you know, I want to see my humanitarian aid going towards schools and hospitals. And Agador brought up a point that says that, well, they store weapons in the schools and the hospitals. Like, who are we to trust? And Eric Kyle says, who by kill the UN? Yeah. Like, who are we to trust?
Yeah, the UN is not that involved here, really, at this stage. It's more going to be having the PA, the Palestinian Authority, have a larger role in this. And the PA unity government, which is what it is, you see, that's the problem, is that, you know, the Palestinian Authority formed a unity government inclusive of Hamas. So basically what we have here, we have a bloodthirsty, hardcore Islamist terrorist organization that has gotten a certain level of legitimacy, and they have acquired more legitimacy through these weeks that I've identified of these talks, and now at this stage, and they will get more legitimacy. It's a bad move on Israel's part. They should have stayed the course. They should have kept their forces in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
And they should have just bared down and focused on what they needed to do. Once again, they would have incurred a lot of casualties. There's no question about it. Hamas has plenty of fighting positions in that environment. You know, they're good at booby-trapping houses. Their rocket supply was dwindled down, but they had a lot of small arms, ammunition, a lot of explosives, a lot of RPGs, you know, the kind of weapons you use in close-quarter fighting in an urban environment. That's what we have in Gaza, is urban warfare. And
sorry, it's just that the chat is rather active, and Eric Kyle once again brings up another very good point. Unless we send people in there ourselves to build these things, Hamas will use it for themselves. Now, would Hamas allow world bodies to go in there and actually do the physical rebuilding?
Well, there's talk of this thing being under some kind of scrutiny. It hasn't gotten into the details of that scrutiny because it's in its beginning stage. But, of course,
mm-hmm.
you would need people on the ground to verify, okay, we just sent you X amount of tons of concrete or building materials. Where are they going? And, you know, what's going to be rebuilt? Now, certainly they're going to have to rebuild certain areas. You know, Rafah, absolutely, got devastated. Khan Yunis, you know, they're going to rebuild these areas. They're going to do that. The thing is to make sure no materials are diverted for Hamas to attempt to rebuild any of their terrorist infrastructure. The thing that's interesting about this whole agreement is that it mentions terrorist infiltration tunnels, of course, coming from Gaza into Israel. What about the network of tunnels underground in Gaza that are basically command centers and weapon caches, storage areas, and, you know, basically this lay-in berth of tunnels that Hamas has used for their fighting purposes? So there's a lot of things that just haven't been added to this whole thing, and I really don't think they're going to be at this stage. Israel keeps saying that they're going to make sure, or it's essential, that their security is contingent, the agreement is contingent upon their security. And for right now, I don't see how that's going to all play in the big picture. You know, really, in a global situation, let's face reality, there's not a single government on the face of this earth, because Israel was supposedly the last man standing. They said the U.S. was the last man standing. Maybe the people in America, some of us are, you know, a certain percentage of them, but the government is not. So there's not a single – I would challenge someone to show me where there's one government of, now, a Western nation. I don't want to hear about that nation in Africa. I know the story, and there's questions, maybe it's real, maybe it's not. They banned Islam, who knows, okay? But anyway, that's the middle of Africa. Western government, one Western nation that has a government that is committed to dealing with this problem, not just from within their borders, but outside the borders, using military assets to target the people that want to murder us. Let's see if anybody in the chat room has got a response to that one.
That would be, yeah, if anybody wants to call in, the call-in number is at the top of the page, please do. We've got ourselves a good 20 minutes left here, so I don't even know how to respond to that myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's a sign of the times, and it's a very troubling sign. And it's reality. It's not very optimistic. But it's the truth. You know, we're dealing with people that will use weapons to murder the infidel. And so without military intervention, they cannot be stopped. And they're entering our borders. You know, they're here. They're in every Western nation. And, of course, they're getting training. Because so many of them, even in America, have been permitted by our governments to go over to Syria and then Iraq and, you know, get some serious training in paramilitary tactics and use of small arms in building explosives and use of explosives. You know, to be good at that, you got to get trained, and they're getting trained, and then they will re-enter Western nations. That's guaranteed. I think the British government, someone said recently, that they are very troubled about the, you know, massive number of fighters that we know have gone and left England.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they're going to come back in. You can't track them. How are you going to track them?
Well, yeah, and that's exactly it. And we're experiencing that in the United States and Canada as well. And they go out and they come back in, and we can't track them. And everybody says, well, revoke their citizenship. Well, how do you do that if they're born and raised in these respective countries, for one? For another, with, you know, the nature of your visit, oh, I'm visiting my grandmother. Like, how do you, yeah. You can't.
Absolutely.
Track it.
Yeah. I would like to get into Syria and Iraq now, since we're down to about 20 minutes or so.
Please do, because it's, yep, this is your time and your call. So please, Michael, go right ahead.
The first thing we need to address is what happened in northern Iraq with a people called the Yazidi, who are a minority people. And people should know the story. They were fleeing for their lives from the Islamic State fighters, and they went into Sinjar, actually Mount Sinjar, and there was a humanitarian crisis. A lot of them have died. America interceded at the last minute, dropped supplies. Some of the supplies helped them. Some of it didn't. We sent special forces people there. They landed on the mountain to assess the situation, which is kind of peculiar because our aircraft can basically, you know, determine what's going on a mountain. You know, why we need to send special forces people there, who knows. But anyway, at least they could see the physical condition. As it stands,
yeah,
there are still thousands of them there. A large percentage of them have been moved down the mountain with the protection of the Peshmerga, the Kurdish forces. And they are temporarily in safety, but in dire need of, you know, humanitarian aid. A lot of them did perish on that mountain. We don't really know the numbers. A lot of children and elderly, people who are just weak. The temperatures were way over 100 degrees. They had no covering, dehydrated, starvation, just many horror stories, heartbreaking situation there. And it's still ongoing. And, you know, the thing is despicable about the media, they kind of downplayed it. Here in the United States, the media has basically made Obama look good, that, hey, wow, you know, he interceded, and he did very little. He did very little in the big picture.
I think it's just absolute lip service. And actually, I just got something here, and it looks like Islamic State, they're at it again. They raided another village, but they were dropping bombs on them.
Yes, they did. Yes, there actually was just a massacre of Yazidis by the Islamic State. So, you know, this whole pretense that they are doing well is a lie. And then, of course, we know that hundreds of their young girls and females have been taken captive as sex slaves. They've been raped, sexually abused, and they are prisoners of these savages. So another terrible, you know, tragic part of this whole thing. ISIS is growing exponentially for a multitude of reasons. Primary reason is that they haven't had any opposition from the West. The West has no interest in taking them on, using military assets to take them on. Therefore, they will continue to gain more ground. The real problem here also, many people aren't aware, ISIS or the Islamic State, they started in Syria. Well, they started in Iraq. After the Iraq War, they moved into Syria because that became the battleground, sure. So they've just taken more territory in Syria. Their headquarters is a town called Raqqa, where they have harsh Sharia law. They have Sharia courts set up. There's an interesting documentary that you can catch on the Internet by an organization called VICE. That's V-I-C-E, VICE. You can Google it. And they just did a pretty good documentary. They went in there. They got rights to film, and they interviewed these people. You could get a more sense of what they're about. So they're making great gains in Syria, fighting the other jihadist groups that, you know, they're opposed to, and, of course, battling the forces of the Assad regime. So they basically opened the border, and there's no more real border between Syria and Iraq. And they're able to transfer fighters and weapons back and forth from Syria to Iraq. As a matter of fact, a group of leaders of the Islamic State were able to escape some airstrikes, and they got back into Syria because we're not doing anything in Syria on the ground to deal with the situation.
No. Exactly.
Right. Now, another development is that in the Kurdistan area, as I said, the Peshmerga which are very tough fighters, they've been begging the U.S. government for heavy weapons and ammunition for months, you know, begging us, and now it's trickling in, and Obama's decided to arm them. But without heavy weapons, that's what they really need, not just, you know, a lot of ammunition and small arms. They need heavy weapons. They need artillery pieces. They need anti-tank weapons. They need some serious stuff to take on the Islamic fighters.
I've got a clip here, and I'm going to bring it up, and it's a little under 3 minutes long, but this is pertaining to what's going on in SACO, Iraq, what happened today, and that they slaughtered at least 80 men, and they took more than 100 women captive, and this is coming from not one of my favorite sources, but pretty much a solid source, and this is from CNN, so let's listen to what the correspondent has to say about this, shall we, Michael?
Go right ahead.
That there has been a massacre in a village south of Sinjar, some 20 kilometers south of Sinjar. We understand that it has been surrounded for some time by these ISIS militants. Well, today they moved in, murdering 80 men. They are the reports that we're getting from the Kurdish regional government as well as from the spiritual leader of the Yazidis. And we understand also that at least 100 women were taken to Mosul and other prisons nearby. So this is obviously a huge concern to the Yazidi population and to the Yazidi leadership, if you like, the spiritual leaders who are looking over these people, because there are reports that ISIS militants are coming in and they are taking these women and children. They're separated from the men. The men are killed, and then the women are taken to these prisons, sold off, or used for sex slaves. Now, it's not just one report. There are many reports coming into it. So, obviously, a growing concern as these ISIS militants continue to attack the villages and try to exterminate the Yazidis, Hala.
And what about the camps where you are now? I imagine it's yet another crisis the UN and other aid agencies are having to deal with after so many before them.
Yeah, Hala, we spent the day with the governor of Dahuk, and he is absolutely overwhelmed with this humanitarian crisis. He says, I can feed the people for a week, maybe 2 weeks, but after that, I can't. I don't have the resources. I don't have the skills. I don't have the manpower. This is a man who's been in the job for all of 4 weeks, and now he is having to oversee this exodus of people, house them, feed them, clothe them, provide them with medical facilities. 250,000 people came just from Sinjar, let alone the other religious minorities who've come from villages in the past few weeks, as well as those from Mosul back in June, and then the Syrians before that. So you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. We were with him whilst he was handing out cash payments to some of these refugees, and they're staying in not just UN camps, but also in abandoned buildings, in schools. They're just taken over schools and under the bridge. You know, we spoke to one man who said that you know, he thought he was going to die on Mount Sinjar. Now he's here. What is his future? So this Governor Hala, he is calling on the UN, the international community, to act now. As far as he is concerned, they are failing these people.
And that is tragic. 400,000 people have been forced out of their homes in Iraq under the auspices of ISIS, or ICE, if you like.
Yes, it is. Now, let me go back quickly. That's just horrifying. I mean, you know, if anybody who's listening to the program in the chat room, if you haven't seen any of this video or pictures, you really got to go see it because it brings it back to where it needs to be. You see this massive suffering. It is heartbreaking. You know, it brings a person to tears to see what has been done to these people and, of course, what is continually being done. You know, if we would ask a question, where should the blame be laid? Where would we lay the blame for this to have come about, for ISIS to have been able to become such a massive terrorist force? I'm wondering what people in the chat room would think about where did this start?
Well, I think it started when a lot of people are saying, I'm seeing this personally, I have so many theories about that, but the one common thread that I'm noticing, the theme that I'm noticing, whether it be on my Facebook thread or the newspapers or even what Hillary Clinton is saying, is that it all started with the ground troops being pulled out of Iraq.
Absolutely.
As soon as the American troops were pulled out, ISIS moved right in.
That's right. Now this is for people who have these ridiculous thoughts. They'll, you know, we can't do this. We shouldn't go into these countries and whatever. Whether we should have went to war in Iraq, that we can debate forever. That's not the issue. The issue is that when you go into these regions of the world, you have to be committed to staying there for a substantially long period of time. When America left, it wasn't just that the military deterrent on the ground was removed, but our influence in the Iraqi government was removed. And Maliki decided, being influenced strongly by Iran, to exclude Sunnis from the government. Now you do have about 35-40% population in Iraq that are Sunnis. And that set a bad environment for these Sunni tribal leaders. And, you know, if you understand the composition in Iraq, you have these tribes. It's very serious stuff to them. So they, because of their hatred for Maliki, went and, you know, they jumped on the bandwagon with ISIS, which made it easier for ISIS to make the kind of gains they've had up until this point. So the only way, once again, you have to bring the fight to them, and you have to bring it with overwhelming military force. It's the only way that you're going to get this thing done. ISIS is going to export their jihad. They're going to bring it to the shores of Western nations. Guaranteed, they already have people within Western countries that are terrorist cells, you know, that can be activated in the future. You got to go to the center, the hub. And the hub right now is Syria, Iraq. That's the focus.
And Bigfoot just put in the chat room that it appears that Maliki has now been excluded from the Iraqi government. Well, this is things are just developing. I can't keep up, Michael.
Well, yeah, Maliki is gone, but that doesn't mean anything's that much brighter. You know, Obama has this ridiculous idea that things can be corrected politically by creating a more inclusive government, and that'll somehow help facilitate things to improve. The only way this improves is you tell your four-star general, who's your commander, you tell him two things, two words, destroy ISIS. You step away, you let him handle it, you let him delegate it down the chain of command, you send in your assets, and you deploy your forces. You've got to send in ground troops. There's no way you're going to beat these people without ground troops because they are lodged in certain cities, and you've got to kill them. You've got to fight them.
Yeah. Erica brought up a really good point as well, is that what we're seeing happening in Iraq right now is that Bush made a mistake in going in and taking out Saddam Hussein in the first place. I mean, it was he was a tyrant, but at least the place was stabilized.
Well, there is an argument to be had there, and we could say that, but once again, you know, reverting back to that, at this point, you know, what will we really accomplish? We have to look at the reality on the ground there. Look, the fact is that America surged in 160,000 troops into Iraq in 2007. Several of them, my friends, who went there to fight in the Marine Corps and the Army, and we kicked the living crap out of the Al-Qaeda Sunni insurgency. We took those bastards down. Okay, America has the most awesome, best military on the face of this earth. Okay, and we did the job. We got it done. But because of a weak, gutless coward and a Muslim appeaser named Barack Hussein Obama, he wiped it all out. And all the sacrifice and you know, suffering and whatnot that have been, you know, given in there. I don't think the Canadians fought there, but I know British and American forces. But it
no,
was really
no. Canada sat that one out, yeah.
Right. So,
we went
to
Afghanistan, mm-hmm. but we sat out of Iraq, yeah.
Yeah. So we have to come up to present day. And the only way to effectively take out any terrorist organization or group is to go and bring the fight to them and to destroy them. Anything less will never bring the sufficient results, whether it's the IDF in Gaza or, you know, what we have in Iraq and in, of course, Syria. I want to touch on Afghanistan for 1 minute because I have many friends who fought in Afghanistan.
Well, actually, you have got exactly 1 minute to do that.
Okay.
Well,
it's a bad development.
Because we are down to our last 5 minutes.
There are a few bad developments in Afghanistan. The Taliban is in negotiations with the Afghan government in a place called Helmand Province, where a lot of British, Canadian, and American forces fought and shed a lot of blood. So things are not looking good there. I just learned that a good friend of mine, his drill instructor, he's in the Marine Corps, just stepped on an IED, and he lost both his legs. He's at the military hospital that I go to. So, you know, we still are losing people in Afghanistan, and it's another front in the battle on Muslim fascist terrorism. But let me use my last few seconds to say, let's please pray for the people who are out there, anybody who's deployed in Iraq from America or any nation that's got forces on the ground in this fight. Pray for these people because they're on the front lines of this battle, and they need our support, and they certainly need our prayers and their families back home.
Michael, I want to thank you so very much for joining me once again. Will we see you next Friday night?
I believe so.
Right on. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for joining me tonight. I am the Red Fox Blogger. My name is Kel Fritzy. I have numerous shows throughout the week, various radio hosts, various panels. I hope that you enjoy them all. I think you do because we're growing stronger and stronger, it seems, every time we do a show. But we have to remember that we deal with the issues of Islam, and that is unfortunately the gift that keeps on giving. Islam, we have to address this once and for all. I think that we are, in a sense, in a crusade. But you know what? We have to remember that we have to prevail, because if we don't, then the West is lost. Remember, it's mass Islamity. We have to stop the insanity. Have a great weekend, and the next time I see you all here at the Red Fox Blogger will be Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. with Mr. Tim Burton. Good night, everybody. Good night, Michael.
Good night.